Spirit Blade Underground, episode 410. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 410.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, we've got a super-powered theme going on that I did not plan, but maybe God just sovereignly wanted to, for some reason, put that theme as a blip on all of our radars. I'm going to be reviewing American Hero, which is a superpower type story, maybe not a superhero type story. And Ken from Honolulu is back to review The Mask, another kind of superhero, but kind of not type of story, both that explore the themes of what would, you know, maybe a somewhat quote unquote normal person do and maybe give into if they actually had superpowers. So a similar theme tackled from two totally different tones and angles. Plus, I'm going to share some thoughts on dealing with suffering taken from the book of Hebrews. All right, here we go.
My father once told me that I could use my powers to make a difference. He told me I had a responsibility to help others. He told me I could save this world, save everyone. Then he told me, walk the gerbil, walk the gerbil. Frickin' weirdo.
Believe it or not, I'm walking on there. I never thought I could feel so free. I really wish this was a reboot of Greatest American Hero. That would be awesome. That needs to happen. Some kind of TV show or movie reboot of The Greatest American Hero would be awesome. That's not what this was. This is just called American Hero, which is about Melvin, as IMDb says, a reluctant superhero who lives only for crime, women, and drugs, until he realizes that the only way he will ever get to see his estranged son is to go straight and fulfill his potential as a crime fighter. I'm not sure I would describe it that way. He's never really a superhero at all in this movie, and to call this a superhero movie, I think, would leave someone disappointed if they went in with that expectation. Let's talk about the story and the script and the pacing and stuff like that. This is a drama. It's a superpower story, not a superhero story. Similar, in some ways, to Chronicle. Also in the way that that was filmed in kind of a documentary style. This is also filmed in documentary style. There's a film crew that is interested in making a documentary about this guy Melvin, who has the ability to move objects telekinetically with his mind. And if you watch the trailer, you'll see a ton of that stuff going on. The trailer to me left an impression of, okay, this is going to be a drama, but it's going to have lots of action in it too. It's going to be kind of a comedy. It's much more of a drama than it is an action comedy. So if you watch the trailer, don't go in with expectations of independent, you know, sci-fi action comedy or something. This is much more of a quiet slice of life drama with a few bursts of action here and there. There are also a few jarring jumps in the editing style from scene to scene that made it confusing to me as to what they were trying to say about the characters. So it's a movie that not only is it a little bit slow and a little bit quiet, but you have to stay engaged and try to figure out, okay, what are they trying to tell me about this character? It's very character driven, and so you're just kind of watching Melvin as, you know, his life is just tanking at the beginning, and then as he, you know, really wants to get connected with his son again because his ex-wife has basically denied him any rights to see and visit his son. So he's trying to clean up his life so that he can spend some time with his son, who's probably about, I want to say, six or seven years old, maybe. And so as a dad, I certainly connected to that type of story. So, I mean, if you're a sucker for father-son stories, I think there's something in this for you.
But anyway, it's, like I said, stylistically, as far as like the feel and the pace of the movie, it's one that you kind of have to be ready to not just be blown away and be spoon-fed all the plot and character elements. You just kind of have to watch and kind of figure out what you think about what this, about this character, what's going, you know, what's going on, where the story is heading. Stephen Dorff plays the super-powered Melvin, and I really thought this was great casting. Last time I saw him in a movie was probably when he was the villain in the original Blade movie. He does a really good job here. You know, Melvin has this hard edge. We learn later on that he's actually an Iraq War veteran, and we don't really know like exactly why his life kind of spiraled downward. It seems to be just like the result of long-term poor choices in his life and in his values and priorities. But he's got this hard edge, but he's also clearly a person who is talented and intelligent, because he's very thoughtful and intellectual at times. But it's also clear that he just hasn't disciplined himself to develop any of that. So he's an interesting character to kind of watch and just kind of see what he's going to say. And, you know, depending on whether he's, you know, using drugs at the time or not, you know, he's a different kind of person and almost has a little bit of a different personality in some of his scenes. And he also has vulnerability and emotion beneath the street tough attitude that he carries around a lot of the time. Eddie Griffin, who is a familiar face, but I couldn't tell you what in the world I've seen him in before. I haven't seen him in anything in a while, though, but he's Melvin's best friend, Lucille, who's bound to a wheelchair. They served together in the war, and that's where he got his injury. He's a great kind of confidant and coach as Melvin endeavors to go straight and clean up his life. He's kind of the angel on his shoulder saying, you got to clean yourself up, man. You can do better things. You can do wonderful things with your life instead of what you're doing right now. But at the same time, he himself does not always discourage when Melvin, you know, kind of tanks a bit and stuff. He's just not as extreme in his substance abuse as Melvin is. And so that's why he can kind of be that angel on his shoulder. The rest of the cast is solid and fits the grounded kind of documentary style well, I thought. Some smaller parts might have even been filled by people that the crew just met on the street. I mean, some of the banter and stuff with like these bit supporting characters, I'm just like, I'll bet these are just people they just found that day on the street while they were filming. This is really interesting, you know. So it results in a very kind of emotionally grounded feel to most of the movie. Not always maybe as like hardcore psychologically realistic, because people, while they kind of get freak out, you know, because of his powers and stuff, there's also a large amount of just kind of acceptance of this is just this a thing that he's able to do, you know. So it's interesting. But it's still, like I said, on the whole feels very grounded. And that really helped to sell the special effects to me, which sometimes were lacking. Most of the effects were pretty good. The effects are all about Melvin moving things with his mind, and so much of the time they're making CG objects to move around on screen instead of like attaching things to wires and then removing the wires later on. And that, when that's done well, you can do some fantastic things. I would again compare it to the movie Chronicle, which had a number of effects in there that were involved moving CG objects, which were standing in as real objects. And in some instances, I was like, wow, that really, if I wasn't like scrutinizing it, I would totally be fooled. You know, it's like, in fact, the first viewing of Chronicle, there were several effects that I was like, I'm not sure, you know, and then it wasn't until repeat viewings that I was like, oh yeah, that's CG going on there. But this movie is not as consistently solid in the special effects in that apartment. Most of the time, it's pretty solid, but there's definitely some times where it's like, ah, yeah, this looks kind of like cheap CG. It's a little bit of a bummer, you know. It does strike me as kind of like a smaller independent film, so that's not super surprising. But I do think it was pretty close in visual effects quality to Chronicle, but I mean, that was, I don't know how many years ago now, at least, I want to say 5 or so. So I wish that the effects in this movie were better, were a step forward. But thankfully, the performances and the tone of the movie helped me to kind of accept and forgive the effects when they were weak. All right, so is there anything of moral, philosophical, or spiritual relevance that might trigger worthwhile thought or conversation during or after watching this movie? Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't think that they were... If they were shooting to kind of like say something with this movie, I think it was a little bit too subtle for me to pick up on, you know, like, okay, this is definitely kind of a moral or some kind of like philosophical agenda, some idea they want to put out there for you to digest. I really do think it was much more of just kind of a character story. I don't think they were trying to say a whole lot. But if I were to kind of dig and contemplate a little bit after watching this movie, a few things come to mind. One would be power fantasy. I love power fantasies. It's one of the reasons that I play video games. I think as long as we're not fantasizing about dominating others, you know, and just kind of being the boss of everybody, if that's not attached to our our power fantasy, that there's nothing wrong with power fantasies. They're actually, I think, a foretaste of the bodies that we've been promised as believers that are going to be raised in power. We're not going to have the weakness and the frustration of this broken, often dysfunctional, deteriorating body in the future. So I don't think that in and of itself there's anything wrong at all with a power fantasy. But I mean, you know, we can, as we kind of think about like what it would be like to have superpowers, we can think, man, that would just, my life would just be amazing, you know, but would it really? You know, we can dream about accomplishing epic things, whether we're talking about doing that with superpowers or just in our lives. Maybe we want to write the next great fantasy novel, you know, or do something else, you know, that's just really significant. I put that in quotes, you know, but in the end, it's really our relationships that matter. It's not these things that we accomplish or these things that we're known for and have a reputation for and we have recognition and, you know, public significance for. It's relationships that matter. And having talents and abilities, even that stand head and shoulders above everybody else, doesn't mean that our relationships will be healthy and that our life will be fulfilled. Another thing that popped up to me was the idea that practice makes permanent. Melvin is really trying to turn his life around, but he's had what looks like just a lifetime of self-absorbed habits that are really hard for him to break. He does relapse at least once. And using alcohol, drugs, sex, or even just entertainment to escape our problems doesn't solve our problems. It's just a temporary numbing band-aid that leaves us empty when the feeling wears off, and it only makes us even more self-absorbed. So I think just kind of having an awareness of, man, you know, trying to numb the pain with entertainment or whatever the thing is that we might choose is not going to fix the problem. It's just going to make it more and more difficult to change and have our life change for the better in the future. The third thing that popped out to me is that religion is really not enough. And even as a Christian, I would say, yeah, religion is not enough, because religion is really just kind of a pattern of doing things that's associated with worship. But this pattern, this lifestyle pattern, it's not enough. Melvin seems to be a church attender in this movie, but his involvement in the church seems to be just kind of one more high that he's trying to maintain, you know, joining in with the exuberant worship singing, but not allowing God to really rule his life and define for him what he ought to prioritize, what he ought to care about, what things are really valuable in life. Faith was not portrayed negatively in this movie, but it's also not especially helpful to any of the characters in the story. It's a theme that it's a bit too underdeveloped to say anything clearly to me, and I'm not even sure they were trying to say anything, but it was, if they weren't trying to say anything at all about faith, it was kind of weird to kind of inject it in there a little bit. So I'm not quite sure what to make of that, but I have no idea what your tastes in movies are, but if I were a time traveler, I'd go back in time and say, Peter, hey, this one's worth renting. Although I should say that when Melvin relapses, turn away when the party music starts until the party music stops. There's some unnecessary nudity that's tossed in briefly that really isn't needed, just to convey to us that Melvin has fallen back into depravity. I would say go in expecting a quiet, slow-paced drama, not an action comedy as the trailer might suggest. And with the right expectations, I think this is a solid movie despite some flaws. Now, it's not rated, but I would say it's equivalent to an R rating for language throughout, violence, and brief nudity. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POSTOS. For more info about the CGC network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Every day, somewhere in the world, a movie is slipping through the cracks. Every year, hundreds are lost and forgotten. But one man refuses to let them fall into darkness. One man risks everything to bring them back into the light. That man is Ken from Honolulu.
Hello, this is a movie review by Ken from Honolulu. The movie is The Mask, made in 1994, directed by Chuck Russell, starring Jim Carrey as Stanley Ipkiss, Peter Reigart as Lieutenant Calloway, Peter Green as Dorian, and Cameron Diaz as Tina Carlisle. Synopsis: bank clerk Stanley Ipkiss is transformed into a manic superhero when he wears a mysterious mask. Review: I give this a quality score of 9.5 and a relevance score of 8. Quality score of 9.5 because it was well acted. The story is fun and the CG is absolutely top notch. The CG was done by Industrial Light and Magic, so everything is absolutely seamless and it's just really good. And such a high quality score because what would you do if you grabbed something like The Mask that could make you a superhero or a supervillain? Which would you be? I mean, you could do just about anything. He's bulletproof. He jumps out of a building and doesn't get hurt. Just all kinds of stuff. So that's why a high quality score. There's a lot of Tex Avery type cartoons when they switch to the cartoons. Like he's in the nightclub and he sees Tina Carlisle for the first time. Actually sees her dressed very sexy. And he just goes hog wild and turns into a wolf, you know, and he beats himself on the head with a sledgehammer, a mallet. That's Tex Avery type cartooning. The film has no cussing, no sex. The violence is cartoonish. So it's not that bad. It's a standard anti-hero type film where there's the guy, there's the sidekick, and there's the girl. However, when you're watching it, things don't always turn out like you think they will. So it's fun to watch. This is Cameron Diaz's first major role. And this is Jim Carrey's first leading role where he was expected to carry the majority of the movie. What I was impressed with Cameron Diaz is the fact that since this was her first major role, she did absolutely wonderfully. A lot of the scenes that they filmed, according to the director in the specials and at the end, almost half of the film was made between 2 and 4 o'clock in the morning. So these people had to be up all day. And then, you know, learning the lines, getting them right and everything else and getting everything set up and getting their cues right and everything. And then they had to go film at night. And sometimes it took 3 or 4 or 5 takes to get it right. So they're going at it for hours and hours. But yet you can't tell that. First time that you meet Stanley, he's being a really nice guy. And that's exactly what they say. Stanley, you're such a nice guy. And he's just given up 2 tickets to a sold-out concert to a girl because she wanted to go with him, but she doesn't want to leave her friend at home by herself. And his friend comes up and he says, oh, that's just sickening. And Stanley says, yeah, but I'm wearing her down. And for those of us who are geeks, who understand the situation that Stanley's in. He's trying to get a girl, but how do you go about it? What do you do? It's kind of fun. I was in that situation myself when I was much, much younger. So those of us who have been in that situation, and it's not only men in that way, there's women that are that way too. And they have been in that situation where they like a guy. And how do you go about meeting this guy when you're a nerd slash geek kind of thing. So you can identify with Stanley Ipkiss. And when he grabs the mask and changes into something else, the first thing he does is, as the mask, he says, I can be a superhero, but first. And he goes to this garage where they are basically ripping him off. And he shoves mufflers in their pipes up their rear ends. When you first see the garage, the name on the front is one thing. But then after the police come, after he's attacked them and the police come, the name, if you look at it, it says Rip Off Garage, which is pretty good. I mean, it's just the way that they did it was quite funny. The original movie was supposed to be, the Mask was supposed to be an extremely violent, mean guy who attacked and killed innocent people. But the director says, no, that's just not going to work. The director and the writer said, no, that's just not going to work. That is not going to sell movies. And so they made the movie they wanted to see. The soundtrack by itself is absolutely excellent. And if you ever get a chance, go ahead and buy it and listen. It's just fun. It's absolutely an excellent soundtrack. The acting, as I said, was absolutely superb. When they did a dance scene, they did, Jim Carrey and Cameron Diaz did about 80% of the dancing. So they worked really hard as actors. They do make a lot of references to other movies. They make jokes of other films and cartoons like Pepe Le Pew. Those of a certain age would remember him. He was a skunk who was always chasing a cat who had been, had a stripe painted down her back, and he thought she was a skunk. So the film is fun. The film is not really violent in the way that we would think of it. It's cartoon violence, so it's not that bad. It's an entertaining film, one that the whole family can watch. Thank you for listening to my review. This is Ken from Honolulu.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
Just a couple of quick news items here. My videos up on youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral this week include the Enclave buyout video, which, by the way, the videos that are up there on that channel now that you see, like still images that go along with the audio and stuff, that's Matt McKinney, our YouTube administrator, that's been doing those. He's been doing a great job. So I just want to, since I haven't said anything on the show specifically mentioning Matt in that capacity, I want to mention that and say thank you to Matt for doing that. He's been doing just a great job converting the audio content from this podcast into videos for YouTube. So thank you very much for that, Matt. But he also adds a little bit of subtle humor and subtext to what you're watching on. So even if you've heard some of the content before, it might be worth, you know, checking it out a second time in the YouTube form. And then also my review for American Hero should be up by now. While you're there, please do like, share, and subscribe. That does help to grow the Christian Geek Central community. Also, a quick update. I don't talk about this much, but for a little while here, I'll probably be talking about it more than I usually will, and then I'll go quiet about it, you know, again after that. And that is the audio drama stuff that I work on for Spirit Blade Productions. Primarily what, now I don't want to say primarily because, you know, I only release audio dramas like every, I don't know how many years, and most of what I'm releasing and putting out there is content for Christian Geek Central or this podcast. But I spend more time, despite the infrequency of release, I spent more time working on the audio drama type of content. And at long last, I'm nearing the end of work on the third part of the Spirit Blade trilogy, Spirit Blade, A World of Shadows. That's going to go out to test listeners probably next week sometime, and then it'll go to print about 2 or 3 weeks from right now. And then roughly a month after that, it will be releasing. So at this point, I'm estimating like some kind of a July release, maybe. Very excited about that. So I just wanted to kind of like keep you guys posted on that as we're getting a little bit closer to it. Also, if you want to help make sure Spirit Blade Productions can keep doing what we're doing or do more of it, both faster and better, which I would love, you're invited to make a donation of any amount, anytime, or become a part of the Spirit Blade Insider Program and get monthly exclusive goodies. For more info, you can visit our About page at spiritblade.com. And while you're there, you're also invited to support us by purchasing a download of one of our original sci-fi or fantasy audio dramas for a friend or family member with our available gift codes. Or if you yourself haven't listened to any of the Spirit Blade audio drama trilogy, now is a great time to get caught up before it all gets capped off in just a month or so. Again, for more information, visit spiritblade.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
in this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language that we often take for granted, digging into history and languages when I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in Scripture. I'm just a guy using resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth, and that's something all of us can do, so I hope you'll do that with me. This time, we're looking at the book of Hebrews, chapter 12, verses 3 through 4, which in the ESV reads, "Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood." Now, the author of Hebrews has instructed us some on how to live out our faith and acknowledges that the life of faith is difficult. In these verses, he provides some perspective on our suffering. Regarding verse 3, the author has already told us now to fix our eyes on Jesus as our model. Now, he specifically tells us to consider Jesus in light of the suffering that he endured from those who sinned against him. We've heard the stories of Jesus so many times that it's easy to forget the tangible, historical reality of them. This really happened. You know, it's tempting to think of God as just kind of safely removed from our pain and unable to relate and sympathize with our difficulty. But Jesus is God himself and experienced a life of difficulty and suffering so great that he's called a man of sorrows in Isaiah 53:3. Pain is easier to endure when we don't feel abandoned to it. And so we're told to consider the suffering of Jesus, who can directly sympathize with us from his own experience. And the Greek word for consider was used to describe calculations involving weighing and comparing. So it's a process that involves thinking over and pondering. And that's the process we're told to enter into as we consider the suffering of Jesus, to ponder, to slowly think it over very carefully. Think about the suffering that Jesus endured from people. And doing this will help keep us from becoming weary or becoming without strength. Looking at verse 4 now. The idea behind the expression shedding blood used here usually referred to dying, not just, you know, getting cut and bleeding a little bit, but dying. The author is saying that we have not yet had to die for our faith. Perspective is important as we experience pain. Anxiety over something that occupies all our thoughts can quickly fade when we give ourselves time to genuinely, deeply consider how much more suffering others have experienced. In light of the suffering of Jesus and the suffering of those mentioned in chapter 11, our suffering is considerably less. Now, I'm going to tell you a couple things that are not in my notes. One, I am not acquainted with suffering. I know that many of you listening to this podcast are much more acquainted with suffering. And so my concern is that what I'm sharing with you guys will just kind of be dismissed, because I've said a couple times, I think, on this podcast that I have just not experienced suffering in life. I think that statistically my time is coming. I don't know what form that will take, but, you know, you live long enough and you experience real suffering. So I'm not sharing all this just from like my wisdom and experience, and I've put these things into practice and I've seen that this is how it works. I am just presenting this to you guys as someone that is trying to trust that what God says about suffering and how we can navigate suffering is true. So please don't hear me as sharing this as a guy who's like, I've been through suffering and I can tell you, you know, I understand what you're going through. I don't understand what you're going through. So I'm just trying to share with you right now what I see the Word of God saying to us about suffering and how to navigate suffering. So I really hope that it's seen in that light. There's also for the rest of us, there's probably a lot listening to this podcast that also are like me, haven't experienced a ton of suffering, but we still experience anxiety. We experience, you know, much lower level suffering. So even if you haven't been through this, you know, horrible persecution, which is really the context for this bit in the book of Hebrews, the Christians had been experiencing persecution, and we just don't experience persecution yet in the same way that they were at the time that this book was written, you know. But my thinking is, if these thoughts that the Holy Spirit is applying to really intense suffering are
valid and legitimate, and I believe they are because they're from God himself, then surely they can be applied to lesser suffering that you and I, as pampered Americans, if you're listening to this American in America, you know, or wherever you're at. I mean, if you're listening to this, you're part of that same kind of more modern culture. You have access to the internet. We don't realize how freaking wealthy we are to just have access to the internet from the local library or whatever. We just are extremely wealthy to have access to the internet. So I think this applies to anybody that's listening that, our far lesser suffering, there are still principles and ideas that we can apply from this to navigate just the admittedly much smaller and lesser times of suffering and difficulty that we encounter. So anyway, now let me get back on track here a little bit with my notes. And maybe repeat a little bit of what I said before I went off on that rabbit trail. Perspective. Perspective is important as we experience pain. Anxiety over something that occupies all our thoughts, it can quickly fade when we give ourselves time to genuinely, deeply consider how much more suffering others have experienced. I know that, like, you know, if someone says, oh, well, this is a first world problem or whatever, you know, that kind of tough love can, you know, in the moment just kind of feel like, really? I mean, that doesn't help me feel any better, you know? And it's true, you know, just a little, like, brief recognition that, like, yeah, this is a first world problem, you know? I would love to say that my character is strong enough that just hearing that phrase said to me or saying that phrase to myself would fix the problem. But it doesn't. It doesn't. And I think that's why this Greek word for consider is important. We're being told to like carve out time to slowly ponder and really carefully weigh and examine and think about the suffering that Jesus experienced because of the evil inflicted on him by others. So I think that's a very significant word choice there. In light of the suffering of Jesus and the suffering of those mentioned in chapter 11 who died for their faith or suffered for their faith, our suffering is considerably less, and we can enter into like a mode of gratitude and relief even if we carve out time to really consider, as the word is here, the suffering of Jesus and the suffering of other believers. All right, so what's in this specifically for geeks? You know, I try to do that every time. Sometimes I feel like, you know, I could go all kinds of different directions here, but none of those would particularly speak to geeks. So that's why in the first half of this, I try to just kind of, as they say, exegete the passage, just kind of like take out from it what is being said and try to make it clear what the text is saying without doing a ton of application, so that, you know, we're not, all of us, we are not only geeks, you know, we have all kinds of other experiences going on. So that's why I try in the first half to just give you an understanding of the passage as much as possible, so that then you can kind of see some application yourself that maybe I don't make because of my focus on, you know, what's in these passages for geeks. So, but anyway, I do try to, since this podcast is geared toward geeks, to, with each of these, ask that question. So what is in this? What are in these two verses for geeks? Well, like I said earlier, because of the historical context, the original readers of Hebrews were likely experiencing persecution and suffering. Their lives were likely much more difficult than our own, unless we find ourselves in unusual circumstances. But this is all the more reason, as I said, that we can apply these verses to the comparatively lighter suffering that we typically experience, or the kind of difficulty that is more common to geeks. So because many of us have been misunderstood or judged in the past, it can be easy to settle into a victim mentality. Our social quirks and shortcomings can also contribute to conflict or other just drama in our lives. This isn't to say that we haven't been victimized, but it can be our tendency to stay in this kind of wounded self-pity mode when we should be in recovery mode. Over the years, I've talked to a number of geeks who seem completely unaware of what they are doing to invite difficulty into their relationships with others. And their insistence on being the one wronged effectively closes off any openings I might have to help them find solutions. Because they've just decided, I am the victim, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm just kind of in this wounded mode. And that's how they experience suffering. That's how they experience difficulty, is just kind of sitting and stewing in it. It can also be the case that because we often spend so much time entertaining ourselves, entertainment becomes kind of the norm. you know, and we become irritated or even a little depressed when entertainment disappoints us or when our entertainment well runs dry. I know that seems very childish, but I'm just putting my diary on the table for you because, for example, I found myself recently becoming childishly grumpy in my evenings the last week or so because of boredom. Because of boredom. How freaking childish is that? And I think that's evidence that something in my perspective needs to be corrected or renewed. I spent about 30 minutes praying and thinking through the problem a few nights ago, you know, which did not provide an instant cure. But it did begin a process of renewal that has been helpful as I've realized kind of what's going on inside of me. And so, you know, we can experience this kind of discontent, this kind of like almost like a light depression or something like that. It's just kind of this funk, you know. And that's, I think maybe that's the equivalent. Maybe that's the worst thing you got going on right now is just some kind of a funk. I think these words from Hebrews about really intense suffering can still be applied to consider the suffering that Jesus experienced. When we kind of mentally isolate ourselves in our difficulty, as I mentioned before, we become disconnected from relationship with God. When we kind of paint ourselves like I'm the victim or I'm just kind of in this funk and, you know, and we don't do anything about it. We just kind of isolate ourselves and allow ourselves to kind of sit in that. So that's I see in myself becoming disconnected from relationship with God. And then we're also just running off course from fulfilling the purposeful life God has designed for us. Remember that this comes in the context of the author of Hebrews talking about this race of faith that we're entering into. He compares it to this athletic race. And when we don't keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, as he said, I think it was in verse 1 or 2, I want to say, then, you know, we're adding steps to our race. I mean, the author of Hebrews didn't say that, but I mean, like pulling from the concept of looking to the end of the race, that's what these athletic runners did. They looked to the finish line to make it as straight a line as possible, as few steps as possible to get them to the finish line. And these weights of sin and just unnecessary things can slow us down, make us ineffective in the race. And so can our response to suffering if we don't respond in the right way. Let's see. Now I've gone off script a little bit here. Sorry, guys. but anyway, when we isolate ourselves, as I said, we experience disconnection from relationship with God. We run off course from the kind of fulfilling and purposeful life God has designed for us. That's why we got to figure out how to deal with this, because pain and difficulty, they're unavoidable realities. Now, we can recognize in these verses both a gentle sympathy, I think, and some tough love. You know, in pain and difficulty, we can turn to Jesus and know that he understands what we're feeling. And I think that's where that gentle sympathy in these verses comes out. It's like Jesus has not abandoned us to be alone in our suffering. He knows firsthand what real intense suffering is, all degrees of suffering. You know, sometimes we think about the suffering of Christ as only happening on, you know, on the cross and the hours leading up to his crucifixion. But remember, this is a guy who loved more deeply than you or I could fathom. And I think was hurt all the more by the lack of reciprocation of that love. He loved people so dearly. He wept over the state of Jerusalem when he was outside the city and said, how I would love to gather you under my wings like a mother hen, but you were unwilling. And he wept over this. You know, he loved us so deeply. So, you know, you and I feel like we, you know, feel the sting, this intense sting of rejection or neglect, you know, from other people. Jesus felt it so much more intensely because he loved so much more intensely and his love was rejected. So he knows we are not abandoned to our suffering by this removed God who will not allow himself to feel any of what we're feeling. He has felt it. And because he's a timeless God, he operates outside of time. I believe that pain is just as present to him experientially if he wants to, you know, connect with that. I don't know exactly how it works when the higher dimensions, it gets really confusing. But I mean, it's not, you know, just because it happened 2,000 years ago, he is not removed from it. That's a very intimate reality to God through Jesus. So that's that sympathetic part of these verses. But there's also, you know, that tough love part. You know, we can lessen the weight of our burdens by seeing them in light of the suffering of Jesus and the suffering of other believers. we don't have it as bad as we think we do, you know. And these changes in perspective on suffering, they don't magically happen simply by scolding ourselves and labeling our issues as first world problems, as I said before. Again, as the word used for consider here suggests, this renewal of our hearts and our minds comes from deeply and slowly pondering the suffering of Jesus and other believers. So whether we're in a grumpy little funk or neck deep in legitimately terrible suffering, crying out to Jesus and also considering his suffering results in strength and endurance to make it through the difficult seasons of life. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? I got plenty of those. We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you to do that. You can send an email or audio file recorded on your phone to PAE. Oops, sorry, I just bumped my microphone there. PAETER@spiritblade.com. Well, I want to thank Ken from Honolulu for sending in his review of The Mask. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, I'll share some thoughts on the Doom video game. I just picked it up from Redbox today. I'm looking forward to giving it a try later on tonight and recording myself while I do that and cutting that together and sharing my reactions and thoughts with you next week. Till then, check out spiritblade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you. Thank you guys so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Something's coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
It's the Grand Negus.
Yes, today was our first Ferengi episode of Deep Space Nine.
Wacky Ferengi antics!
Starring Wallace, inconceivable Sean, as the Grand Negus.
Who I just love impersonating.
This one was a little cheesy, but not that bad.
Ferengi episodes were almost always humorous episodes. And the problem is, the Ferengi were... They never know what they want to make of the Ferengi. Are they the profit-driven race? That could be interesting. But then they make them into these cartoon evil characters to where they're like, how dare you be selfless and learn things? Oh, but you tried to kill me. I'm proud of you for that. That's just idiotic cartoonishness. But the plot of this episode. The Grand Negus, who's the leader of all the Ferengi, we've never heard of him before, but he shows up, and he has a huge meeting, and he names Quark his successor. And then he dies, so Quark becomes a Grand Negus and has to deal with things. That's roundabout really it, is Quark dealing with being Grand Negus. Obviously, by the end of the episode, he does not stay Grand Negus. But, shockingly bad characterization for Rom, Quark's brother, in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, ugh.
They did not know what the character was going to become, obviously, because by the end of the series, Rom is like the super nice guy. He's too nice for his own good and kind of dumb, but in a good, heartwarming way. In this one, he's flat out evil.
Yeah, they really changed their minds on Rom.
Yeah.
And with Rom, it wasn't so much character development as at some point they just changed their minds on who he was.
Kind of like what they do with Jadzia Dax. They just like switched her into something else. But yeah, that's about it. There's not much to this episode. If you like Ferengi antics and wackiness, you'll like this.
There's a Jake Nog subplot.
Yes.
It's just mediocre. It's not
after school special stuff,
but it's
yeah.
It's okay. The best stuff is really Sisko.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're interested in the Ferengi at all, they do set up several things, including the Negus and several of their little cultural things. The fact that they eat grubs, which Kim loved. She loves bugs. So if you don't care about the Ferengi, if those kind of details don't matter, then you can skip this episode. If so, if the Ferengi are important to you, if you want to know about all the world, then you'll need to know this episode to know some basics. And other than that, that's about it. See you next time for Vortex.